Shalom and welcome again to another edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. It's these podcasts that we present in order to help explore the impact of the longevity revolution on our congregations and our community. And we invite you to visit our website, jewishsacredaging.com, as well as the Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. And we welcome your comments and suggestions to Rabbi Address at jewishsacredaging.com. And on the website, you can leave a voicemail message if you so choose by just going to the homepage, jewishsacredaging.com. And with great pleasure, we welcome to the Seekers of Meaning microphone for this edition, Rabbi Claudio Kogan, who is the director of the Institute of Bioethics and Social Justice, associate professor in the Department of Internal Medicine, and a module co-director of Medicine, Behavior, and Society at the University of Texas Rio Grande Valley School of Medicine in Edinburgh, Texas. And Rabbi Dr. Kogan is also a chaplain to the local law enforcement agencies in the Rio Grande Valley. He received his rabbinic education through HUC and is a medical doctor receiving his medical education in Argentina, and he's a native of Buenos Aires. So, Claudio, shalom, buenos dias. How are you?
Thank you, Rabbi Address, for having me in your program. I really appreciate the possibility and the opportunity to talk today with your audience.
Well, we want to talk about something. This is continuing right out of the headlines. You bring a very, very unique approach to your work in the southern border. You're a chaplain to law enforcement agencies in the Rio Grande Valley, which is one of the ground zero, so to speak, for a lot of the immigration concerns that are happening right now. You were a rabbi of a congregation in that area, in McCallum, I think, and you have a medical degree. You know your way around the text. You know your way around bioethics. You know your way around the southern border and the ambiance of the Rio Grande Valley. So you bring a huge amount of experience to this issue. So I really guess want to start this off by telling us about your involvement. Now, I know you have been on the ground. I know you've been around the United States speaking at congregations. You were here in Philadelphia in March, I think, speaking at one of our congregations, and you've been in other congregations speaking about what your experience is with the immigration issue on the southern border. What exactly is your involvement with this community right now?
Thank you once again for your address. One of the phrases, one of the thoughts, one of the teachings that my mentors and teachers always taught me was the idea of tikkun olam, of improving the world. That is kind of my leitmotiv and the energy that moves me all around this place. What I'm doing here is the following. I'd like to just briefly tell you about how I started. In the year 2014, being close to the Catholic faith, I was involved in helping Sister Mara Pimentel. She's the head of the Catholic Charities, and she was welcoming and giving, restoring the dignity to people who came undocumented to our area. So I was bringing from food to clothes to supplies that were people in need, as every single chaplain, rabbi, pastor should be doing. That's the way that I did at that time. And as well, I am a law enforcement chaplain, so I have to see the other part of the equation, which is how to improve, how to raise the morals of people who are keeping our borders safe, people who are doing the best to maintain, you know, the order, and people who, in most of the cases, their families came to America, you know, in different ways to having the American dream. So I was trying to see both parts of the situation and giving my soul to both sides since 2014. And as well, using that as a teaching tool for our congregation, as I serve as the rabbi here in Temple Emmanuel in McAllen, to teach my members the importance of Tikkun Olam, but just not by saying or by reading, having the possibility of practicing, having the possibility of bringing food, you know, to the shelter, to the respite center, having the possibility of creating a mitzvah day, which never had happened in the 70 years of the congregation. So gather people all around in order to walk the walk and talk the talk of social justice, of Tikkun Olam. The message that our prophet taught us, but put in practice and having the possibility of doing that. As an immigrant who came to the country 20 years ago, I was honored to open the U.S. House in D.C. twice, in 2015 and just a couple of, in March as well this year. And in both opening, in some ways, I was trying to convey my message that I was able to concrete my American dream. And I was praying, and I'm praying that others will do the same in a way that will be by the law. We know that we have a principle in our Talmud, which is Dina, the Malchuta Dina, the law of the place of the law. And we have to abide by the law. And it was the same message that I took when I spoke in congregations in Florida in February, when I spoke in the Northeast, in Philadelphia, Lexington, Massachusetts, Washington, D.C., you know, Rockville, Maryland. And I like to transfer to show this message, to share this message with other places as well. Because, you know, the issue that we are living today is a crisis. And I will not try to see who is responsible, if it's, you know, one side or the other side of the aisle. I think that we as Jewish people, our goal, our task is to remember the 36 times that our Bible talks about how to respect and to welcome the stranger, how to help the widow and the orphan. And that is our task, and especially talking about social justice. So this is who I am, a person who tried to be involved in the situation and to try to be as much as I can in the middle, because one side need help, those who are coming need help, and those who are having to protect our borders. Shoftim beshotrim tielachem. We have in our Bible and our Torah, we're learning that we have to have justice, judges and policemen to keep our society safe. And I think that we have to remember those sides of the picture in order to improve our world.
Yeah, Claudio, I think it's very interesting. And thank you for that perspective, because I think, you know, the media coverage can be so one-sided on this, but for you to approach this, as you say, down the middle, from a perspective of text and Tikkun Olam, and remembering that as a chaplain to law enforcement in the Rio Grande Valley, as you are, many of those families, I don't think people realize it, many of the families that you're dealing with who are on the Border Patrol, their own families came from another country. They are also, in essence, maybe first generation in the United States. So there's a... I would imagine it's a very interesting line that you have to work. And I imagine sometimes as the role of chaplain, some of these law enforcement people have opened up to you or had a conversation with you about maybe their own struggles, because it's as you have pointed out, it is a humanitarian issue, is a social justice issue as well. So I imagine you hold in your soul lots of emotions from both sides, which is, I imagine, quite a challenge for you.
Exactly. And as a rabbi, always we want to have the message of our prophet, to advocate, to do our best. But we have to remember that we have the capacity and we have the task to educate both sides, to tell the families who are coming, please remember to go to the church when you have your hearing, to tell and to remember those in the line of duty, to remember that they are dealing with human beings. And those are things that we have to put in practice and remember, educate. You know, as rabbis, we like to jump to our best, but I encourage everybody. The possibility and the capacity that we have is something that we sometimes forget. So yes, I hear both sides. I hear history for both sides. I hear in the souls of both sides, from those who are bringing small kids to our country because they are escaping dangers in their societies, you know, for maras, from criminal activities, for different type of awful things, you know, to people who are spending hours at night, 3 a.m., 4 a.m., and exposing themselves in places that, you know, are very dangerous as well. So that is my task as a rabbi, as a chaplain, as an educator, you know, that I decided to pursue. And, you know, and this sometimes create in the other side, you know, confusion.
Right.
What are you, I mean, who are you representing? In one of the congregations that I spoke, somebody said to me, I am confused. Are you working for Border Patrol? And I said, no, I'm not working for Border Patrol. I'm trying to share with you the story in the middle, so at least you will have two sides, because it's important that we'll see and we'll do the best to help kids that are separated from their parents. But it's important as well to see, you know, how we can keep our borders safe, because let's remember, you know, we, all of us, we are astonished and when we see the image of a kid, you know, a younger kid, 2 years old, 3 years old, coming, you know, with their families, sometimes small kids by themselves. But we have to remember that there is dangers on the other side of the our border. And those are things, you know, I live about 20, 30 miles from Mexico. And my members, I remember how they told me, please do not cross the border. Please do not cross the border. So there are additional things happening on the other side. So we have to remember that when we omit our judges, when we do and we think and when we do the best, again, to improve our world for Tikkun Olam.
You mentioned that the congregations you've spoken at this year, and from a wide variety of congregations, as you alluded to, what was this sense of the reaction on the part of the people? Was it divided? Were their minds already made up about what was going on? Were they open to hearing, you know, your approach, as you say, down the middle, trying to understand and approach this from the concept of tzedakah and justice and stuff like that? What was the reaction in the congregations that you spoke at?
That's a great question that in some cases I was personally surprised. I think that they were expecting that I will share with them all the quote, unethical things that were happening. But they were surprised. I would say that's the best way to describe, because I wanted them to have a different picture. I mean, nonetheless, I am sad when I see the amount of people who are coming, the amount of kids who are coming. I brought to the shelter, you know, $400 or $500 in clothes for kids. Warm clothes, and as soon as they arrived, they disappeared because all the kids wanted to take that. But, you know, but I need to tell the story from both sides. So people, back to your point, to your question, were surprised that they thought that in some cases Border Patrol was the evil in the picture. And I said, they are doing their job of protecting the borders the best they can. So that's the best way to describe. But for me as a rabbi, as a person, it's important for me to tell the message. You know, it's not just what people want to hear. It's not about only one channel. It's about how we understand the whole situation with our two eyes. You know, that's why I really believe that our pasuk, our verse says, tzedek, tzedek tirdof. Justice, justice you shall pursue. It doesn't say tzedek. And as you know, our sages ask the question, why twice? And I always say, we have two eyes. We can decide to see the reality with only one eye, or we have to decide to do the best to see with both eyes, and then to do our best to improve the situation.
So you were surprised by some of this reaction from people in congregations as a result of your working with them. Do you think some of these individuals really began to understand the two eyes, the two tzedek idea, that there's, you know, what is portrayed perhaps in the 30-second soundbite on the news, there's more to that? That's what really is concerning, because you pour your heart and soul into this. You live it. We don't. And then, you know, you live it. So did you find people open to this concept of approaching this from the perspective of the text?
Some people, yes, some people not. You know, some people want to hear what I will call the sensationalistic thing that happening here. You know, it's like, you know, I always tell the story, or when people even though come to here, they want to see the, you know, the news side. It's like I always said, when you go to a safari in Africa, you go and see the jungle, you take pictures with the monkeys, and then you leave and you go back home. But guess what? The monkeys and the safari are there in Africa, and they're still there. Mm-hmm. So my job is to how we can do the best, you know, not just to see and to hear what we expect, but to be open to see a reality that need action in different ways. One of the questions that I received in one of my talk was, can you please share one of the, if there was any unethical thing that happening here? And I said, I'm sorry to say that, but for me, in some cases, in some way, the unethical thing is what's going on in the sea. In which way? In having a status quo. In which way? In seeing that the situation is not being resolved, is being, you know, thrown from one side to the other side of the aisle. It's not about one administration or the other administration. This is about a crisis that all of us, no matter what our political ideas are, we need to be on board. And not just to point out and say who is guilty and who did this and who did that. It's, we have this situation, how we will respond. I think that God is asking us, in the same way he asked, you know, Cain when he, you know, killed Abel, you know, where are you? We can say, Ashomera hi Enohi, am I my brother keeper? Or to say, you know what, in any, like Abraham, Moses said, we are here. We are here for action, to do things.
Claudio, you made this journey. You came to the United States from Argentina. You, perhaps more than many people, understand what it's like to make your way in a new country and figure things out. And you went to HSC, so you doubled the pleasure, supposedly, of more school and stuff like that. How has your own personal journey and what you lived impacted your work on the southern border?
As an immigrant, you know, who always remember, Lech lecha me'artzecha, me'moladetecha, me'beitavicha, el'aretz ashereika. Get out from your house, from the land that you are born, from the land of your parents, to the place I will show you. You know, and this was my journey that I was honored and inspired by Robert Marshall Mayer, who in 1993 shared with me his passion and illuminated me to become the person who I am. A, B, being an immigrant who was honored and blessed by the Hebrew Union College to come to America 20 years ago, you know, and going through all the status of all the visas that you can imagine, and except that I didn't have the investor visa because I never had that money in the bank to have that visa, but all the others I had, and recognizing all the system and all the legal system to become an American, you know, gave me the privilege to see, you know, what had happened in my life and how privileged I was. In some way, how to inspire others, like they're coming because they don't have that fortune to be, or inspire, or the umbrella for an institution to come to the country, or they don't have the means, the money to pay for God, for going through the whole stages. my past kind of blessed me to be who I am and inspired me to make a better future. I'm telling you a small story about in November, the Federal Church asked me to be the guest speaker in the naturalization ceremony. I said, Rabbi, I had 300 people this time, first time in my life, in my career, from five continents. 300 people from five continents. Could you please inspire them with your journey? So I said to myself, what I have to offer there? So then I thought about our Decalogue. So I decided to create the Decalogue for the newcomer, the Decalogue for the new American. So I started to speak about things that happened in Argentina, things as I grew up and things that are different in America. And I said as an example, one of the things that you have to accustom is April 15 is tax day. We always remember when you come to America, you pay taxes. And all the people start to laugh. Why is that? Because guess what? In other places, you do it in a different way. When you are ever stopped by a policeman, you don't give any money. You know, everybody start to laugh. You know, and I said, those are things that happen in other places. So what I'm trying to say to you is that my experience gave me the knowledge to understand in some ways how people are coming to our country and what things they are expected to do that they are not accustomed. One thing that I'm saying when I'm seeing people who are in this process and they are undocumented and they have to be have a date with the judge is please attend that meeting. Why is that? Because in some places, some countries, people are afraid to be, you know, to go to a judge because the corruption is so high that people decide to not go. So those are the things that I learned from my own experience to communicate to others. You know, as I always said, we have, when we come to America, we need to reset our computers.
So there's 10 commandments for this talk that you gave to the natural. Did you write that up? Because I'm sure that would people would benefit from those 10 suggestions. Did you write up?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty. Where can somebody get it?
I'd be happy to send to you.
Oh, we'll put it on the website. I mean, that's pretty cool. Yeah. You're a physician, and it's an obvious question. How did your training as a doctor and also now as a rabbi, how does that influence what you do in what you're doing now? I know you're as we mentioned before, you're an associate professor and you're working in UT Rio Grande Valley School of Medicine. But is there a linkage that you're finding between this pastoral ministry with the immigrants and your own medical training as well? You've already expressed the rabbinic training, but is there a meshing of the two worlds that you live in?
Yes. You know, let me share with you that this seed was installed again by Rabbi Marshall Mayer, who had the idea of creating a rabbinical seminary in Argentina in which rabbis need to have another degree. So you may choose to be a doctor, a psychologist, a sociologist, a philosopher, but you have to have another degree. So I decided to choose medicine. So while I was studying both at the same time, I found a lot of things that are in common, such as see the patient, understand where the patient comes from, understand that diseases may be because, you know, in some cases, their spiritual situation. And that's the message I'm trying to convey to my students today. You know, remember that every single human being that you're going to see as a doctor has a spiritual need. They may have different ways to express that. But, you know, if they ask for a chaplain, please take it that seriously. If they have a day that they don't have to have a surgery, being from Yom Kippur to Easter, remember that seriously. So they are two sides of, in some ways, of the coin that all of us carry in different ways. Some people may be less religious, some people not. But those are things that we as doctors, we have to respect and understand from each patient. Even though I always bring the bishop and the imam together and to have a talk with the students as well, because I want them to understand another faith as well. You know, some students are seculars and they say, why only this? Why only that? I said, well, because you never know what you can expect and you have to be prepared and to be informed. And again, to learn what other faith that in some cases is different than you grew up may understand and may see the disease. There's here, you know, something, you know, different thoughts from the spiritual side that people conventional. I mean, if you are a doctor, sometimes it's hard to believe, such as, I give an example, mal de ojo. What is that? It's evil eye. And those things that here where I am is people believe, really believe in that. When I grew up, was something like, well, we don't go that way because that is not medicine. Today, I have to teach my students that it's part of medicine that if a person share with you, you know, an idea regarding similar, that you have to pay close attention to that.
It's you remind me of that Heschel essay, the patient as a person, when he talks about the role of the physician and being open. And there's some Maimonidean passages too, talking about the openness and the meshing of the mind, the body, and the spirit. And I know there are some people like yourself and medical schools who are attempting to do exactly what you're doing, about making medical students more aware of the faith communities that they're going to be dealing with. Because once they walk out of medical school, as you're teaching your students, you don't know who, what faith background is working with that patient. And it could be very, very, very important, as you're alluding to their healing process. So it's interesting that, and I think it's an advantage that you have about being able to mesh your rabbinic training, your medical training, and seeing that as one holistic approach.
Yeah, and let me tell you something else that is in some way related to the topic we're talking about. And in some cases, in some medical magazines appears this issue right now. Right now is undocumented people are coming, and hospitals should treat them, should not treat them. This is a new thing that, you know, the amount of numbers is growing so fast that it's not here in the Valley. This will happen in a lot of places in America soon. Not only from measles or other things that, you know, any type of disease, any type of thing that people may carry when they came after they travel, should hospital treat, you know, undocumented people, yes or not? That's another discussion that's coming to, you know, to the table in the medical field. Personally, I do believe that we as doctors, we do an oath and we have to treat everybody, no matter if they are documented or undocumented. But when people may not have health insurance, when people have the means to pay other treatment, what will happen? We diagnose, you know, a type of cancer. Okay, you know, the patient came in a very difficult condition to the hospital. How will be the follow-up of those patients? What will happen with the American health system that already has some issues? You know, those are things that I foresee coming in the future. Some, you know, right now are on the discussion in different ways, you know, but I foresee that as something that to be prepared because this will happen.
Well, you're absolutely correct. And that gives you an opportunity, I think, a very unique position, Claudio, from your perspective to write about that and to speak about that and to try to alert as many people as possible. There's been a lot of, that's probably a little hyperbolic, but I know there have been missions of rabbis going to the border to ascertain or to look and to investigate and to bring, I guess, material. Two part. Have you been involved with any of these missions? And in your opinion, what has been the impact of these visits?
Yes, I was involved in those missions. Some rabbis came. I always tell my colleagues to come to learn. Don't expect to see with your eyes what you have heard in the news, because you may have heard or you may have seen things that were not so much correct. I'm trying to, when people are coming here, to show their reality and try to see both sides, you know, and that's my hope and my goal. And I hope that my colleagues will understand. I see that some people want to have a sensationalistic way of, I was there, I helped, this is who I am, our congregation did social justice, bingo. I will try to ask people to go 3 steps backwards and to be open to see a situation and do the best, because this is not over. You know, no matter what kind of help you can send here, this will be in need for long, for the next couple of years. And I'm talking about, not about money, I'm talking about food, I'm talking about clothes, I'm talking about really tikkun olam. I encourage, you know, congregations to bring their mitzvah groups. I'm telling congregation to bring their confirmation classes. I am trying to do the best for congregation to come by themselves. I'd be happy to travel for Shabbat, to speak in different places, to share the story and to see that there are sort of things to be done. But I always remind people, you know, we are immigrants in maybe 2-3 generations, but we as Jewish people know better than anybody what is to be an immigrant. So please do not forget.
So Claudio, let's deal with this real before we start running out of time. Suppose somebody is an individual listening to this and say, I would like to do something, or a congregation. What's the best way for, let's say, a community, an individual, and a congregation to be of service and help in this area? What do you need? How do they do it? Who do they talk to? All that stuff. Because there may be a congregation, an individual who hears this over the course of the next several months and says, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. What do you need? How do you do it?
The best way is let's be in touch. Ask them to be in touch with me. I'd be happy to speak with them and to see what they would like to achieve. If they want to come here, if they want to do a project for their congregation. I'll give you an example. Some congregation asked the Hebrew school to prepare good wishes cards for New Year for the kids. So they sent me about 300-400 cards, and I give to the kids, and you know, and I took my kids as well to give them out. And you cannot imagine the smile of the kids saying thank you. Another congregation decided to do boxes for Easter. And last Friday, in Easter, in the morning, I give out about almost 300 boxes to kids, to each kid. And, you know, those small things, you know, you cannot imagine how many lives, how many souls have been touched by those small gifts.
So do people need clothes rather than, is it clothes more than money? You know, just practical stuff like that. And or materials, little toiletry articles, what is most needed?
I would say yes and yes. Yesterday I spoke with a former member, you know, to bring hygiene products. The day before I spoke with another congregation in Florida, they sent me about 30 boxes of clothes. Another congregation sent me gift cards to buy in Target. So I went on the weekend, you know, and I gave them things that they need. Lots of things they are in need. And, you know, we are talking about each day in the respite center, you know, that you will find about an average between 500-600 people.
Right.
Different people.
So how does somebody get a hold of you? Do you have a website? Do you have a special email set up? Suppose somebody says, oh, I want to talk to this guy and get an idea, or some colleague may say, well, I would like to talk to him about maybe setting up to bring our religious school or our confirmation class or a group. How do they get in touch with you?
My cell phone, you know, you have my cell phone, please provide my cell phone. My email, CJ Kogan. C as Charlie, J as John, K as Kilo, O as Orange, G as George, A as Apple, N as Nancy, at yahoo.com.
Very good. And if somebody emails you, then it's cjkogan@yahoo.com with these types of questions. You'll be able to get back to them and instruct them and do that. If a group wants to come down, what city, you're in McAllen?
Yes.
Okay. And McAllen, Texas is located in the Rio Grande Valley, and your closest big city is what?
That's a good question.
Not that McAllen, I don't want to disparage McAllen, Texas, but I'd say.
By the way, the area is growing fast, for you to know. There's an area over a million people combining all the different towns. We are about 3.5 hours from San Antonio, 4.5 hours from Austin, and about 5 hours from Houston.
Okay. So that's good to know. So CJ Kogan, K-O-G-A-N at yahoo.com to get a hold of Rabbi Kogan. Claudio, I want to thank you very much for giving us your time and your expertise, and just wishing you continued success in carrying out this mitzvah, tikkun olam, and tzedek, and the tzedek tir dof, being able to see with both eyes. It's a great midrash, and I'm sure several colleagues will wind up using it sometime between now and the high holidays. So congratulations on that as well.
Thank you, Richie.
Because you never know when you need a pertinent midrash. But listen, thank you very much.
Let me finish with saying that one of the lessons that I learned from Pirkei Avot, which says, Lo alecha amlecha ligmor.
Right.
It's not your job to finish this task. But they always said, Ela le'atchil. But it's time to start.
Right. We don't have to save our little part of it. And believe me, that's getting tougher and there's enough to do. So thank you. Toda roba. And again, haslacha, but much success and just stay healthy because we need you.
Thank you. Thank you, Richie, for your time and the possibility to speak with the audience.
You take care, man.
Thank you.
And before we sign off from today's podcast, I want to let all of you know of an exciting addition to the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts. We're now able to accept donations that will allow us to expand our work and grow the programs of Jewish Sacred Aging, as well as these podcasts. We're working with the Jewish Community Foundation of Southern New Jersey, which is a 501c3, and we're going to be using their umbrella that will allow us to move into this area of development. And we'll be rolling out a more detailed announcement over the course of these several weeks. But if you'd like to support the work of Jewish Sacred Aging and these Seekers of Meaning podcasts, we welcome your free will donation. And you can send a check to Jewish Sacred Aging in care of the Jewish Community Foundation. And that address is 1301 Springdale Road, Suite 200. That's 1301 Springdale Road, Suite 200 in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. The zip is 08003. And we thank you. We thank you again for listening to today's edition of Seekers of Meaning, the podcast of Jewish Sacred Aging. Again, we welcome your comments to rabbiaddress@jewishsacredaging.com and invite you to visit our Facebook page on our Jewish Sacred Aging Facebook page. These podcasts are recorded at the studios of the now award-winning Lubetkin Global Media here in Cherry Hill. And a big thank you to our producer, Steve Lubetkin. I'm your host, Rabbi Richard Address. Thank you for listening. Take care. We'll see you next time. Shalom.